welcome to NSTA The Bus Stop. This is the official podcast of the National School Transportation Association. I'm Kurt Mackison, Executive Director, and pleased to welcome today James Davis. James is the Assistant Vice President, Passenger Transportation over at National Interstate Insurance. And James has been a frequent contributor to NSTA The Bus Stop and has also been on some of our webinars and presented at some of our live meetings as well. So James, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Kurt.
Well, always a pleasure. You know, you've been a frequent guest on the podcast, as I mentioned, and also have done some other speaking for us. But in case folks, you know, may have missed those previous engagements, why don't you tell us a little bit about National Interstate as well as your role with the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So National Interstate was founded in 1989 by writing school bus insurance business. So, you know, since our humble beginnings in 89, we've come to be the market leader in the passenger transportation insurance space, you know, writing business, a wide array of passenger transportation business, you know, from motor coach to shuttle buses to transit buses, airport shuttles, et cetera, all the way down to the student transportation, you know, business as well as part of that. So at our heart, we're really a transportation insurance expert. Not only do we do that passenger transportation focus, but, you know, we do a lot of other wheels-based insurance outside of that space, including some of the trucking and the waste hauling and the big bad cranes that you see out on the road. So a wide array of a business, you know, from that perspective. You know, my role specifically is to kind of cultivate and grow a profitable book of business in the passenger transportation space. You know, and we do that through kind of an offering of different insurance products, you know, from guaranteed cost insurance products where you pay a dollar premium and you sleep at night and you're trading dollars from that perspective, you know, all the way to our award-winning captive programs, which allow customers to participate in the risk-reward proposition of the insurance transaction.
Yeah, and I'm sure that keeps you very, very busy. You know, as we enter 2024, you know, everybody always kind of takes a deep breath, whether, you know, your insurance, you know, expires early in the year or not, there is a tendency to look at all areas of your operation. And as, you know, folks do that, what can you tell us about the insurance market? What does it look like as we start 2024 and what might be on the horizon?
Yeah, so when we look at the insurance market in whole, right, really some of the biggest exposures that we look at or the biggest concern, I would say, for school contractors is going to likely be on the liability side, and specifically the auto liability side of things. And so, you know, that market continues, you know, if you look at it on a holistic macro basis, continues to be what the insurance industry is going to, you know, define as kind of a hard market, meaning not only is it hard to participate in it, but it's hard to get pricing. It's hard to get capacity as well in some cases, meaning to get the policy limits that you need, you know, in many cases. So, and we can get into a little bit of that, but, you know, the biggest reason why you're seeing that is the loss costs continue to rise due to a lot of different factors from that perspective. But holistically, or fundamentally, if you look at the insurance, the commercial auto insurance space, and that's all commercial auto, you know, entities, including some truck and other autos used in commercial settings. But if you look at the last 12 years of the commercial auto results as a whole as an industry, what you're going to find is there's one profitable year out of 12 years. And you know, the insurance industry looks at the profitability of a book of business, you know, via combined ratio. And when a combined ratio is above 100, that means, you know, you're losing money, and below 100 means you're making money. So if we run our combined ratio, or the industry runs their combined ratio at a 95 combined ratio, we're making 5 cents for every premium dollar that we write. Those are really thin margins, you know, realistically at that number. But the problem becomes, again, when the whole industry, you know, has that one profitable year out there, you know, that creates pricing pressure, you know, because the biggest issue with insurance is you're trying to price for something that you don't know your final cost until 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road, right? Versus a bus manufacturer or a widget factory that produces something and kind of knows their known cost. So that's kind of what you're running up to on the commercial auto side. That expands a little if we expand that, you know, Kurt, to the excess market, meaning, you know, if you need limits above $5 million, that continues to be some headwinds there, you know, on that with primarily that's accessed through reinsurance markets. So insurance companies for insurance companies are called reinsurers. And what you're seeing there is reinsurers are allocating capital in different places. And what they kind of, you know, they see the writing on the wall when an unprofitable segment isn't making money, they're going to pull their capacity back a little bit from that perspective. So you're seeing a limited number of reinsurers now in that space, and that's driving up, you know, excess costs. So something to keep in mind for people that are contractors that are buying more than $5 million of coverage, those high towers of limits, you know, 5x of 5, you know, up into the, you know, $10, $15 million limit range, are getting more costly and harder to get. So when you see, you know, when you see those renewals, you're likely to see, you know, prices higher year over year there, just by the virtue of what's kind of happening in that reinsurance market.
Yeah, I mean, just so many factors, you know, are involved. And the other thing too, and maybe you can talk about this just a little bit, but in times when, say, the stock market isn't doing well, does that factor into, you know, you were talking about the insurance markets trying to look ahead and try to get some predictability. Do, you know, volatile, you know, markets, including the stock market, you know, also have a very profound effect on what the final premium is going to be?
I think it does to a degree, Kurt. So I think what you're going to see is, you know, companies that are underwriting focused, you know, are going to probably put that to the side for the most part to kind of price their business and come up with the right rates. But when you have that volatility in the capital markets, you know, it's hard for the insurance company to in markets in general to kind of, you know, project out, you know, much more than a couple months at a time to understand what type of yields they're going to get in safe investments. Because at the end of the day, any investments that the insurance company makes are going to be for, you know, in preservation of capital type of, you know, instruments, right, such as, you know, the fixed bond markets and stuff like that. We're, you know, for the most part, we're not out there, you know, investing in hedge funds or venture capital or even, you know, high growth, you know, stocks. Certainly, we can put a little bit, you know, money there, but for the most part, you know, you're really looking for a safe investment because you have to be able, you know, reason that we put invest those dollars is to pay for claims down the road.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, taking all this into consideration, in terms of the audience that we have here, you know, private school bus operators, what are some of the challenges you see with private operators and their insurance policies in the current market?
Yeah, so this hits in a little bit of the root cause of why you continue to see the unprofitability, but, you know, the hardened market, when you have a claim, as an example, you know, what you're seeing is just an impact from social inflation. And social inflation is, you know, can be deemed a lot of different things, but it's the reality that people believe that their claims are worth more nowadays. And, you know, one of the things that you're seeing is a shift in jury pools in almost all venues. You know, beyond that, you also see plaintiff attorneys, you know, certainly trying to shop to the right venue or get their claim put into a more or favorable venue for their outcome. And we certainly try to defend that and make sure that we get it in the venue that we want it in. But what you have is jury pools that view any case of an accident and see it as, okay, it's the defendant here is a private school bus contractor, you know, and the insurance you know, carrier that's coming along with it, right? And so they kind of view that, you know, as much as a lot of these are family-owned operations, they're still companies. It's still, you still have a little bit of that anti-corporate kind of, you know, viewpoint. So when we think about a trial or something like that, the jury pool, you're supposed to get a jury of your peers, right? At the end of the day, well, you know, my guess is that most peers on any jury aren't owning a bus company or know the struggles, you know, that kind of go into to owning a company and what they're necessarily facing. They view it as, hey, this bus company hit, you know, hit this person. And so we need to award some money because this person deserves it, you know, from that standpoint. So that creates a leverage point, you know, in settlement negotiations, you know, because of, you know, plaintiff bar is very, brazen in their attempts to, you know, take things to trial because, you know, they know they have a bit of a leverage point from a claim standpoint. So you certainly have that and factors like that drive, we'll almost call nuclear settlements where, you know, not necessarily this big multi-million dollar, you know, nuclear verdict, but you have settlements, you know, that happen every single day are increased year over year. And claims are just going for more. It's a tough claim environment. It's a tough legal environment, you know, at the end of the day. And so that's some of the challenge, you know, when you get in an accident, you have to deal with all of that. The best thing you can really do is kind of, you know, prevent that from, you know, from happening and close out a claim, close claims, you know, usually the best claim, to be honest with you. You know, the other thing that we're kind of seeing is, you know, that drives into this is, you know, the expansion of the definition of negligence, right? The insurance policy is designed to bring somebody back to whole, you know, at the end of the day, whoever got, you know, hit in the accident or who got an injury from said company. And what you're seeing is, you know, I would say kind of expanding definition of the bus company getting involved in more and more cases. So as an example, this could be a bus stop situation where, you know, our contractor dropped off somebody at a bus stop, but maybe missed that bus stop by 100 feet, give or take. And because, you know, they missed that bus stop, you put that person in peril in a different spot. They get hit by somebody else, a different car or something like that. They bring the liability all the way back to the bus company because they put them in the wrong place. So you're seeing just, you know, you kind of add it all up and there's a lot of pressures, you know, specific to the, you know, the school bus space.
Yeah. You know, so many, you know, pardon the pun, but so many moving parts, you know, to it as you've explained. One of the things that, you know, that we were talking in the run-up is also like the politicization of the courts. We, you know, seen it with, you know, in the political sphere with, you know, folks being brought to, in those cases, criminal trial in some places where it seems like, you know, there's a lot of judicial activism, you know, these days in places like, you know, New York or, you know, Washington, D.C. I do think that probably does filter down in some respects, as you were talking about, in venue selection for, you know, potential trials. So where plaintiff's bar is going to try a case to be, you know, more favorable to their client. And it goes back to that old saying, there is no, you know, free lunch. So, and I'm not sure, and you're closer to it, obviously much closer to it than I am, that folks, you know, think about that a whole lot, that, you know, anytime there are these, you know, verdicts that come along in the nuclear verdicts, there has to be a level of fairness, you know, in the system. So if, you know, verdicts aren't in alignment with kind of what's fair, it really harms everyone. But I, like I said, I think you're closer to it. Do you think people just aren't aware of that or don't think enough about it where it's like, okay, these things come across and they don't necessarily connected to even their individual, you know, premiums for car or for homeowners or wherever?
Yeah, I do. I think, I mean, it's not a secret that there's some venue in areas that we just don't like to be in. And, and want to avoid. And it's for the obvious reasons that we know we're not going to get a good result, you know, on any trial there. You know, on the civil side, you mentioned kind of the, you know, the criminal side, you know, the civil side, you know, tends to see a lot fewer, you know, actions all the way through, but, you know, becomes very much a negotiation behind the scenes. And, you know, the more problematic piece of that is, when the verdicts do happen, is it creates, again, precedent and leverage points for people to negotiate off of today and going forward. So now we know what a neck and back injury might cost in a certain venue, you know, based on, you know, a result, you know, from there. And then you create a settlement and now you have a precedent of what these things kind of cost going forward. So to your point, right. No free lunches. It creates a bit of a flywheel that is not a good one in some cases, right? So we try to do our best as an insurance carrier to defend and get good settlements, you know, but sometimes venue and, you know, some of these circumstances, you know, win out where, you know, any insurance company is just trying to get the best financial outcome at the end of the day. Right. And, you know, that's what all insurance carriers, you know, strive to do. And sometimes, you know, morally or ethically that, you know, it may make sense to settle, but financially it might.
Absolutely. Now we talk a lot on these podcasts when, you know, you're on and we have some of the other insurance folks on about risk management. And I guess it's good to know that I practice what I preach on these podcasts, but I was recently going through, you know, my coverages at the beginning of the year, and I had noticed that my EPLI, Employment Practices Liability Insurance, limit was very low, and I immediately took steps to increase it. I think, and once again, you're closer to it than I am, that is just one area of insurance that is just, to me, burgeoning because of the number of factors that can go in, you know, to someone filing a claim, you know, in that area, whether it's, you know, social media or, you know, employee discipline or, you know, even benefits, you know, mismanagement. Yep. That might not, you know, be your fault. First, I guess, you know, can you talk about that piece of insurance a little bit as I see it as an area to really keep an eye on? Because there's more of a potential nowadays than there was previously for a claim there. And then some other areas that you think that, you know, operators should look at.
Yeah, I think that is I'll call it emerging trend in this space. You know, probably, you know, those exposures, I think, have kind of always been there. But I think some of it has to speak to, you know, the culture of some companies, too. I think more and more people are... individuals are a little bit more, you know, mercenaries than anything else nowadays, hired guns. And, you know, you're hoping that you can hire somebody for a couple of years and kind of hang on, you know, from that perspective, you know, versus years ago when people joined companies and stayed for a long time. So I think that could potentially contribute. I think you're also seeing, you know, on that front, the employment front, really, you know, what you're kind of seeing is, you know, culturally, I think it's so important, you know, for bus companies to keep tabs on that at, you know, at the end of the day. So, maybe moving from that to just like some other areas to really, I guess, consider in terms of, you know, best practices, you know, to think about, you know, to, mm-hmm. On your insurance spend. You know, the first thing I always tell people is for whether it's, you know, an employment coverage or, you know, some of the bigger spend, you know, on the liability side that you have is, you know, make sure that you're working with an agent that knows the space and a carrier that knows the space. You know, there's people out there that just don't, they're not going to provide a whole lot more for you other than just a policy and they're going to write checks. So, you know, working with somebody that knows the space, I think, you know, crucial. We're not the only ones out there. There's certainly a broad range of brokers and agents that are well, you know, and experts in this space. But it's definitely important for any school bus contractor listening to this that be working with somebody that, you know, knows the space well.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of great information on this podcast, James. One final question for you, and it's come up in a number of different a number of different times on the podcast, but never in the insurance realm. So we'll talk about it. And that's AI, artificial intelligence. There has to be an impact in the insurance market, you know, for AI. And I'd love to, you know, understand it from your lens. You know, what do you see, and you know, what's this going to do to affect the insurance markets moving forward?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question on AI. It's a buzzword that's thrown out. There's, I think, a lot of different evolutions of how AI is being, you know, used. But a couple areas I'll focus on specific to the, you know, insurance, value chain. I would say AI in some sort of predictive analytics is, I would say, worked into a lot of modeling and claim reserving that already exists today. A lot of it's probably, I'll call it, more basic or rudimentary, you know, from that perspective. So, but think about things like understanding some toxic combinations of if you have a neck and back injury in a certain, you know, state or city or venue, that's going to cost more than it's going to cost in, you know, say Iowa as an example, if it happens in New York City versus Iowa. And so being able to tie together some of that, contextual data, is already, I think, providing, you know, some lift for insurance companies to better understand where claims are going to go. And we can also use it on the underwriting side to better understand, some of that, some of the viewpoint going in and how to price appropriately. So you certainly have that. I think probably the biggest impact, you know, to listeners that I'm seeing though on the AI side is probably on the camera technology side, the fleet safety side, where, those that are using the, AI managed service, cameras that can detect, bad driver behaviors, you know, help get out in front of a driver, bad behaviors that lead to accidents. So, you know, key is driving down your preventable accidents, but, that space is growing. And I think it's a big opportunity for school bus operators because there's a, you know, historically, you know, you kind of manage those things based on lagging indicators in terms of, well, they got in an accident, so now we're going to fix their behavior, right? Nowadays you can use these, you know, telematics based, you know, indicators, you know, and within a lot of these dashboards, you have things like, harsh braking and speeding, and it exposure bases it all over, you know, per 100 miles, per 1,000 miles, whatever it may be, to help you understand if you're looking at your driver risk profile, who's your good drivers and who's your bad drivers. And then it helps you focus your coaching attention on drivers that, you know, need more of that attention or should be off your rolls or a higher risk, standpoint. So you're seeing that's happening today in a lot of transportation, companies in terms of, you know, you're taking that AI, which is detecting not only that stuff, but other things like cell phone use. It's detecting head nodding for somebody that's fatiguing, and it's trying to get out ahead of it and prevent accidents from happening. If you can prevent accidents from happening, you can find ways to mitigate your cost, you know, from that perspective. So that's a couple of areas that I think, you know, are being impacted by it. I think AI and the future is on a lot of roadmaps for insurance carriers to figure out how to further broaden it on, you know, claims intake as an example. When a claim comes in, you know, trying to find ways to, you know, quickly, you know, assess the claim, you know, versus, you know, multiple documents and in medical reports and police reports and stuff like that. But you're also seeing it on the claim side with, medical records is a good example too, where it can be applied, you know, in that realm to better understand what the real injuries are. So. Yeah, hopefully that gives you some idea what's to come in the future in the AI space and the insurance world.
Yeah, and continually evolving. James, a lot of great information as always. you know, on this podcast, if folks want to learn a little bit more about National Interstate, where can they go to find that information?
Yeah, so I always plug the yellowbuses.org vendor directory. You know, we're in there, so you can find our contact information in there. And then also, if you want to reach out directly, you know, our website, newly rebranded and relaunched, is the best place to find us. And that's www.natl.com. And you can go on there and learn more about our products, services. You can also ask for somebody to follow up with you through that website and see all the great product offerings we have.
Excellent. Once again, our guest at NSTA, the bus stop, James Davis, Assistant Vice President, Passenger Transportation over at National Interstate Insurance. James, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your schedule to join us on NSTA, the bus stop. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Kurt, for having me. Have a great day.